This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston. We are professional radio.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Welcome to another edition of Technology Bites here on 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston, your source for very little right now in the studio. Here's Jay.
What a vote of confidence. I can feel the love. I have to assume it's love. I don't want to open my eyes.
I don't know what you call that.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And I'm Dwight.
And
I'm Groovehouse.
And stop waving that iPhone around. Well, we want to remind everybody that the Geek Gathering is this Friday. We're going to be giving away Dwight Silverman's iPhone. Well, we're going to give it to Dwight Silverman. But hey, an iPhone. Come on.
You'll have to pry it out of my cold, dead fingers, which may happen.
That's actually the contest, yeah.
According to the Facebook event page for the Geek Gathering, it looks like a good turnout. Check the weather. It looks like it's going to be very nice for being outside there on the patio at the coffee grounds. So we hope you'll join us on Friday night.
And, you know, odds are the end of the line for the Watchmen from the theater downtown will probably stretch all the way down to Coffee Grounds.
Is that the first day it's open?
It is.
I think so, yeah.
We thought it was going to be opening night was last week, but we were, last Friday, but we were wrong. So we are in competition with the Watchmen. You know, I was watching the previews for the Watchmen, and I got to say, it looks like it wants to be really good, but I don't think it's going to be.
One of our people who write about movies, Tracy Scott, saw it.
Yeah.
And she said it was wonderful.
Really?
Yeah. Now she's a fan, but she thought it was very, very good.
Yeah, I haven't read... I read it back when it came out, and I don't think I've read it since then. So I really remember almost nothing about it.
I had the original comics. I remember
the
little smiley face with the blood on it was... You know, pretty cool for a child of the 70s to see that. As, you know, that iconic picture of this yellow smiley face with, you know, with blood on it, kind of making it a little bit more grim than we might remember the smiley face. So, Okay, so if you want to go see The Watchmen on opening night, if that's important to you, then
fine.
Go for it. You won't have an opportunity to
replace
iPhone. Although, timing-wise...
Oh, I thought you meant us.
Me, if you're planning...
Oh,
if you're planning...
You just go. I don't want you there anyway. All you're going to do is hold audience in the front of the coffee shop, and then when you're done...
anti-geek guest.
When you've used up all the valuable interactions with the guests, they can be ushered into the back area. I just got through talking deflected. But yeah, if you want to go see the Watchmen,
I'm thinking you could plan yourself a pretty good geek night. Though you go out, you have a little dinner, you go to the geek gathering, hang out for a couple hours. That puts you around just in time to get a ticket and wait in line for a say, 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock showing of the Watchmen. And
well, if you're really dedicated, you'll go to the midnight showing on Thursday night. If you're really dedicated, sleepy. So don't give me that.
Drowsy at the. No, I just mean if somebody's planning their sort of geek evening, that would not be a bad.
Yeah, coffee, food, and then head out to the Watchmen.
And they do serve hard liquor and beer at Coffee Grounds.
So we can guarantee the movie will be a great experience.
That might actually help. I want it to be good, though. It's going to be disappointing if it's not.
Well, I saw the, they're doing, Heroes, I think it was, they had a commercial for The Watchmen, and it was a character profile. So they did Rorschach. And
wasn't he on Welcome Back, Cotter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Cotter! So... because they were clipping out all the scenes of this guy in particular, it looked very stilted. But the effects to me looked like they just weren't really working exactly right. So I kind of got the idea that the production value in some of the eye candy was going to be really strong, but some of the other stuff was going to be a little stilted. I think
the Rorschach thing during Heroes, my wife was unimpressed. Yeah. She knows I've told her I'm going to probably go see it, but not this coming weekend because we won't be in town. So
well, that preview in particular left me nonplussed about actually a little skeptical about how good the movie might be. But then I thought, well, because they're trying to isolate this one character and show only him during the preview,
because the CGI was horrible. Because it didn't even look like a face. Look like splotches.
No,
well, stain.
What did it look like to you, afflicted?
So tell us about your relationship with your mother. You know, your mother got a drive-by commenting on Geek Radio a couple of weeks ago, by the way.
Yeah, I happened to notice that a couple of days ago.
Right.
And she's probably listening.
Hi, afflicted's mom.
No, I think they usually listen last hour.
She's a night owl, huh? She's a space owl.
Yeah, actually, yeah, she is, actually.
She, right now, she's installing Ubuntu.
Oh, yeah, I have a very sad confession to make. I actually got the data off that hard drive that I asked about last week. I downloaded a recovery tool that I hadn't used. I was kind of looking for the good ones, and the good ones were really expensive. So I looked for one that was kind of good, like the reviews were pretty good, but wasn't quite as expensive. But then when I went to purchase it, I ended up finding a thing called Trial Pay that it's a part of. It's an interesting deal where you if you want to buy this, you can go through Trial Pay to buy something else, and then you get whatever you wanted for free. I mean, and that could suck, but they actually have some decent stuff. So I didn't get something I really wanted, but I was able to buy something that I was okay with, and then I got that in addition to the software that I was going to have to pony up like 60 or 70 bucks for. So it kind of worked out, and actually I was able to retrieve like my mail, which was the biggest thing that I wanted.
Well, actually, wasn't able to retrieve anything, but it was okay.
But no, it wasn't.
But he has a Zune now.
No. See, but you're getting warmer because the deal is I installed Windows XP on something. And I haven't installed a Windows operating system since Windows 2000, and that was, when I installed it was probably 2 or 3 years old.
Oh.
So, yeah, I haven't installed a Microsoft OS in, 5, 6 years.
So how'd that go?
Do you feel dirty?
Yeah, I felt really guilty.
You felt dirty.
And then the Unix gods got back at me at work. the next day because somebody overwrote one of my systems with Windows.
They struck down my Linux boxes.
Yeah. Whoa. So.
Well, you know, it's okay. It starts with XP.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not going to install Vista.
The gateway OS.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You should play with Windows 7, though. I think you'd like Windows 7.
Well, the
it's got Unix down inside.
See,
you know
that's
that,
the
right?
reason I'm doing this is because I need to install the Exchange tools on this box because I'm going to set up an Exchange system at home.
Once
because
you install
I'm gonna start
Exchange,
doing,
you are the tool.
I'm going to start. Yeah, I'm going to start doing Exchange stuff now.
That's right. You had mentioned previously
now
that you
now you must feel dirty.
Yeah.
In this economy, you can't be
you
too finicky
you
about your operating systems.
You will install Exchange and you will
you'll, put, you'll put on that push-up bra and those pumps and install Exchange.
You'll take the
no
HP
plasma server.
The bustier and the short skirt.
You'll take the Intel processor with Windows installed on it and use that for your workstation and you'll like it. All right, so, Geek Gathering. It's going to be good. I'm on the recovery end of a cold, so I'm hoping that I'll be much better by then. But I'm starting to get the kind of Barry White thing going just a little bit. But, yeah.
It's the tail end of it, though?
It's the tail end of it, but usually that means that I end up with it, my voice is the last to go. I've had all of the purging, you know, the gooey purging, and now it's time. Speaking of gooey purging, there's gelato.
Pistachio gelato.
All right, so visit us online at geekradio.com. That's where you can learn about the IRC. You can also contact us via the website. And there's an IRC client right there on the website if you want to join us in IRC. There's also information about what IRC server that we use here during the show. And you can also pick up the stream from our website now. So we've got all the good stuff at geekradio.com or technologybytes.com, depending on how much you want to type. Like I said, IRC is going on, irc.cuckoo.com and #TechBytes. And the phone number is 713-526-5738. We're going to be taking your calls a little bit later in the show. First, though, we're going to go to San Antonio, realize that we made a mistake, and come back to the studios where Peter Hughes is live with us now with all the info shot you can stand.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes.
Yes, I've been binging on technology news all afternoon, and now I'm going to purge it all over your radio.
I'm
going
to leave.
I got to go to the restroom, too.
My shoes are clean.
So. In a really, to me, kind of odd deal, Apple announced upgrades on virtually all of their desktop hardware without a press release or anything like that. Basically, the Apple Store went down, the Apple Store came back, and it's all new stuff.
No, they put out a press release.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
Did they? Oh, I
had to.
It really
had to
seemed like the finger wave thing, you know, where it's just sort of.
It was a short one.
Go to apple.com.
Bye.
Written in crayon, you know. So I guess part of it, one argument for this approach is that none of the externals, if you look at the outsides of all these things, none of them changed very dramatically. Any changes on the exterior were subtle, if there were any. But they did upgrade the Mac Mini. It looks virtually identical to before, but it has a boatload of USB ports. It also has the new better graphics thing in it, and you can put up to 4 gigs of RAM in, so that's kind of nice. The iMac I think was had the most interesting news from a desktop computer standpoint. They basically dropped the low-end 20-inch iMac, went away, and the other higher up in the line iMacs slid down a spot, so now, and they lowered prices, so that's nice. Now there's only the 20-inch iMac is the low-end one, and then the rest of them are 24s. All the rest are 24s. So the, like, $1,400 iMac now is, instead of being a 20-inch with, like, a little faster processor, is now a 24-inch. So that could be nice. They also, some of the higher-end ones of the IMAX can take 8 gigs of RAM. And if you buy the, like, ultra-powerful one, the $2,200 one, with the 3 gigahertz processor, it comes with a terabyte drive and can take the 8 gigs of RAM. So that's pretty awesome. The Mac Pro changed on the inside a lot. It's got the new Intel Xeon Nehalem quad-core chipset in it, which, if you want to dig in there and get really geeky, the difference in this is it's a real quad-core. Apparently, in the past, it was essentially sort of hacked dual cores that they kind of made talk to each other instead of being four cores that are kind of equal and have their own memory space and that kind of stuff. So that's pretty cool. And then they did... Then the odd one to me is they came out with a wired keyboard that's a wired version of the little bitty Bluetooth keyboard. They came out with a wired version of that, which I could have seen going the other way and coming out with a wireless one that has the number pad on it, but they went the other direction.
I think they're just being contrary. Everybody was wanting the bigger Bluetooth one, and they said, we'll show you.
We'll give you the little one.
Yeah,
or I guess if you have like a mini and you want to have the kind of whole miniature approach to things, then that would be taking up less space or whatever. But it was just kind of odd. And the Mini, speaking of which, Wired had an article on it that I thought was pretty good called The Mini, the Mac Mini, Apple's Redheaded Stepchild. And they wonder on... Well, first off, it's been 600 days since the Mini was really updated. And, you know, people were predicting that Apple was going to dump it. There's no real solid estimates of how many Minis are ever sold. But people have bought them. You wonder, are half the sales just people who unboxed them and opened them up so that you could have the, you know, inside the Mini reveals? But the big thing on the Mini, of course, is now it'll drive two monitors. It's got the Mini DVI port and the Mini port or whatever, Mini Display port. And so you can drive two monitors, so that's kind of nice. But changing out the RAM is apparently not for the faint of heart. You have to, like, pry the thing open and with a putty knife and hopefully not scratching it. But if you want to get your RAM from Apple, they will get you for good money to put more RAM in. So there's that. And then the other one that was really kind of in the, hey, that's pretty clever, why isn't anybody else already doing this? Airport Extreme and Time Capsule, both of them, now they have dual-band Wi-Fi radios so that they can work in 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz bands simultaneously and separately, supporting up to 50 users, and you could even set up separate limited access networks for guests. So that means at your house, if you want to secure your Wi-Fi, you can do that, but you can also open it up so that if somebody's over at your house, they don't have to type in a 47-character web password to get on your network for, you know, 25 minutes or whatever while they're visiting. You can control their access and allow it for, you know, without a lot of effort.
There's a Linksys model that will do that, I think, the WRT610N that has two separate streams. But I don't think you can set up a separate account on one.
Well, and apparently the Apple's, the thing with the dual channel thing, is it will, you can name them the same, and Apple computers will choose the stronger, faster network out of them. Or you can give them separate names and force, you know, your old computers to connect to the B, you know, the 802.11b type thing, and then the other ones can get the 5 gigahertz, I think that's N, and get the higher speed and so on. So that was, it shows that somebody was paying attention. I guess I kind of like, in any of this computer stuff, I like when somebody pays attention to the details of, you know, making the product serve people better on the way they actually use it. So I thought that was pretty cool. But now we need to talk about the MSI Winky. The, like, bizarrely named What is the MSI Winky? Well, it's little. It's cute. Actually,
but don't touch it. Don't touch it.
It is an instant-on operating system that is in a dongle thing, a module that you plug into an MSI motherboard, and it gives you that kind of quick boot, instant-on approach. Apparently, it is Linux-based, of course, and looks a heck of a lot more elaborate than the Hyperspace instant-on OS that people were kind of talking about in January. It's only for desktops because it's actually built into a physical module that plugs into an MSI motherboard. And at first, only select motherboards will come bundled with Winky, but it just might roll out across MSI's entire line. And Gadget, they couldn't get any more details about whether it would ever come to the laptop line. But they suspect it will in due time. Winky provides easy access to IM services, Skype, and the Internet, which is a shortcut to Doom away from being all the true gamer needs in life anyways. And in other new product news, this one, you know how, remember when computers got small enough that then somebody crammed it into the display and called it an iMac? Well, now they've gotten so much smaller that Asus has the E keyboard, which is a home theater PC stuffed inside a keyboard, complete with wireless HDMI and a secondary touchscreen that will come out in May or June. Now, remember, this is a computer and a keyboard. It costs like a computer, so it's going to be like $400 to $600. Asus CEO Jerry Shen says they're working on two models, one wired and one wireless. The wired version will run around the $400, and the wireless, of course, will run on the top of the line. It has a 5-inch built-in display, a 1.6 gigahertz Atom processor, 1 gig of RAM. It's got a solid-state drive, so it's a 16 or a 32 gig, and then it has Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. And then it's got the regular set of ports in addition to the wireless HDMI. But it actually has kind of an Apple look to it. In the comments, somebody said, I could buy an Apple keyboard and an iPod Touch for the $600. Although you couldn't get a computer that would control, a media computer that would hook up to your TV after you bought the Touch and the keyboard. So, and they have any money and stay under the, say, $600. So that one was interesting. And then, finally, one that's a story especially for Jay Lee, because he doesn't have one. Sony's DSC HX1 20x Super Zoomer with 1080p HD video isn't a rumor anymore. It's a Sony SLR camera. It's got a 9-megapixel CMOS sensor and automatically pumps out 224-degree panorama shots with a single sweeping motion. Ooh. Even though Sony's description is smattered marketing BS speak, like Exmor sensor, Bion's processor, and G-Lens, which increase shooting speed to 10 frames per second and reduce noise by 50%, whatever metric that's based on, it really does sound like a tight competitor to Canon's similar SX1, especially since Sony's is $100 cheaper. For all the stuff I just described, how much do you think they'd charge for it? Well, it's only $500. Is it
an SLR, really? With detachable lenses?
I don't know if it has detachable lenses. That may be the thing that's...
I think this is the non...
Well, no, they've got a stack of lenses sitting there next to the promo picture.
Those might just be accessories. Oh, those are lenses. Yeah. Interesting. I know that they announced some new lenses, but
so 1080p. Well, it doesn't look like they say it does 1080p HD video, but that doesn't look to be like that they really say that it does that. So, anyways, so now you can have more hardware envy. That little new item. I saw it was from Sony, and knew you're a Sony brand kind of guy. It says here it'll get capture movie clips in 1080p HD resolution and a built-in stereo microphone records crisp, clear audio.
Now, that's the thing that sets it apart from other digital camera, still cameras that do video, because like the Canon and the Nikon that do that do not do audio.
Ah, at all. Okay, and it says that it records 30 frames per second in HD. So, so you can fill up your, so you can fill up your hard drive that much faster. And that's the news.
All right. And it is really warm in here. I need to stop drinking that coffee.
It's toasty.
It's like a Steve Reeves movie in here.
Okay. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you'd like to be on the air with us. And
go ahead, call us.
Yeah, we don't have any calls in the queue, so. Oh, don't sweat it.
Put a groove house to work.
Yeah. Groove house is just sitting around.
I need a paper bag to bring.
No, he's just here for the ladies.
Callers.
All right, never mind. We're not doing this. Let's not. Let's
don't
just not do
it. Don't make me turn
it.
This show around.
Turn around, there won't be any tech talk for anyone.
That's right. Yeah. Hey, it's 713-526-5738. We're lonely.
Oh, Dwight.
Call us.
So, I did see, and we talked about this a little bit before the show, but I did see that there's a Kindle reader for the iPhone.
Yeah.
And so you've actually, what, you compared the Kindle 1 and Kindle 2.
Right.
And then now you have this iPhone app. I saw you had a write-up on it in your tech blog.
Yeah, it has, it's free, and you can read your Kindle books in it. You cannot, however, buy a book using the app itself. There's a Get More Books button, and you press it, and there's a link from there that takes you, that fires up Safari, the browser in the iPhone, and from there you can go to the Amazon page and buy a book.
I wonder if that's an
Apple
limitation as opposed to an Amazon's app.
I have a theory. I think that they rushed this out, and they just wanted to get the basic reader out there, and that there will be the purchase, because it's,
well, there's also rumors that that Apple hasn't, that they have a rumored announcement on the 24th, and I had forgotten about this one. Apparently there have been trucks bringing large numbers of books to the Apple campus, and they don't have like a big library there.
But
so,
you know, they wouldn't.
The rumors have been that Apple may be looking to add books to iTunes.
I don't think Apple would store books.
They have to scan them. They would be bringing them in to scan them and set them up for iTunes.
Huh, interesting.
Because, yeah, it wasn't truckloads of the same book. It was truckloads of all kinds of different books.
Huh, interesting.
And so they may be doing the high-speed scan thing and putting them on.
Well, I think there will be purchase in here. The other thing it will not do that is kind of irritating, you know, if you have like the New York Times app, you could turn it sideways to read the New York Times, and you have a wider display and it's easier to read. And while you can increase the font size in the Kindle app, you can't turn it horizontally to see it, so you're stuck with the vertical design.
That's sort of weird. Isn't that kind of inherent to the iPhone?
Well, the someone mentioned to me said that.
Well, I'd like to point out that you can't do that with a real book either.
Yes, you can't turn
you
it
can't
that
just way. Change the orientation.
But the other thing is, if you turn it that way, then you have two movements. You have to scroll up and down through the page and then change the page.
Oh, I see.
See, so that, or it, you know, you would, they, it would change the way they'd have to display the page when you turned it sideways, how you would paginate through it. Turning pages is just a swipe of the finger, so it's really it's really nice. Actually, reading is pretty pleasant, but it has enough limitations that that's basically about all it does is read.
So, would you rank it? Is it equal to the Kindle One, or not quite even?
It's its own thing. It's its own thing, and it actually, I think, is really designed to work in tandem with a Kindle. So, for example, if you're reading a book and you stop at the end of chapter 3 on your Kindle and you open the iPhone app, the book shows up at the end of chapter 3 on the iPhone app.
Well, that's cool.
And all of your books, you can download them one at a time, or you can download all of them, but they remain on Amazon server until you download them. So they don't take up space until you're actually reading them. Then when you're actually reading them, you don't have to be connected in order to keep reading through the book.
That's too bad. It seems like they're allowing you to sort of share it with yourself with your iPhone, but they won't let you share it with somebody else.
With somebody else, right.
With another Kindle user.
Right. So it's pretty pleasant to use, but it could do a lot more, I think.
Cool. Hey, and that brought out the caller.
Yay,
it
callers.
Brought out all kinds of callers with my name.
Peter Pete. Yeah. Peter Pete.
There just are not that many people out there.
Wow.
That name, but...
let's get ourselves some
And they
Peter.
Obviously aren't me, because look, my lips aren't moving.
All right, Groovehouse, who do we have?
Up first, we've got Peter.
Peter! How are you tonight? Peter, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm okay. I enjoy the show.
Thank you.
I got a question.
Okay.
I have Zoom alarm on my laptop. It works pretty good, but lately it will not let me go on the internet. And then I realized, well, if I shut it down, I will be able to go on the internet. And, of course, that defeats the purpose of having it if I continue to do that.
Are you saying that it stops working on the internet and you have to restart it?
If I try to go on the internet, my browser will not open. It will say it cannot open, it cannot open. Then when I shut down Zone Alarm, it will open.
Oh, I see. Zone Alarm is preventing.
Correct.
Well, what I would recommend that you try doing is uninstalling Zone Alarm.
Uh-huh.
And then download the latest version and try reinstalling it.
Okay.
And see if that doesn't clear the problem up.
I cannot just update it.
I'm sorry?
I have to uninstall.
I would recommend uninstalling it, because that... Basically, you know, Zone Alarm, as it's, once you've installed it, it learns about how you're using the internet and allows
okay.
certain things to happen and denies certain things. And
okay.
basically, by uninstalling it, you're going to just retrain it. There's a way to do it without uninstalling it, but I don't understand why you would be resistant to uninstalling it, because it's not going to take you very long.
Got it.
It's just easier to, you know, and quicker if you just uninstall it. Reboot it, reinstall it, and see if that clears it up. There's a more manual way to do it, but I don't really feel like, you know, discussing that. And it's just easier if you just uninstall it, reinstall it. It's going to accomplish the same thing.
Okay.
And that way you cover all the bases. I mean, there are some intermediary steps that you could take to try to resolve this issue, but why do you care?
That's right.
It's just, I mean, if you have access to high-speed internet, you can download the Zone Alarm install files really fast.
Okay.
And it won't take you any time at all. All right, Peter?
Thanks a bunch.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Although, you know, in some cases, when you uninstall an application like Zone Alarm, the configuration files remain, and then when you reinstall it, it picks
up... Not true for Zone Alarm, though.
Zone Alarm will...
Zone Alarm does seem to...
Zone
Alarm.
Oh,
my God, there's
you
a Zune! Run!
You hooked up a Zune. You can't go on the internet now.
There is, as I was talking with the caller, there is a particular file, and I forget what it's called, but it is the little configuration file that tells Zone Alarm what you've allowed and what you've denied and all of that, that you can go find and delete. But when you uninstall it, it does the same thing. It will kill it. Not like Office, where if you have a problem in Microsoft Office and you uninstall Office and you reinstall it, and everything's back to where you left off when you uninstalled it.
Right.
It's horrible.
Yes, I like the well-mannered applications that ask you, do you want to install the configuration and the settings, you know, when you install, and that way you kind of know what's happening during the process.
Yes, we like.
Well-mannered.
Applications that behave themselves. That's kind of why you've probably been drawn to the Mac. Do the Mac applications tend to be more well-behaved than, say...
No, sometimes. Actually, what I find, the kind of the basic way to uninstall something off the Mac is just to drag the application to the trash. But that leaves behind...
System preferences.
That leaves behind all these little files that they're, you know, there's not an uninstaller for them, and then you have to go and root them out. And so I actually kind of like the Windows process of uninstalling better, because I think when it works like it's supposed to, it actually gets rid of more stuff.
So on the Macintosh, is there an uninstalled program for some applications?
Yes, some come with it, and you know, and when that's the case, you're in good shape. Yeah.
Do you think the between the Windows and the PC, are the Mac uninstallers better or worse or the same?
Probably the Mac uninstallers are a little better because they have to do less. You know, the PC uninstallers sometimes have to go into the registry and yank, you know, it's kind of...
Now, sometimes it means, though, like this kind of zone alarm problem on the Mac, if you went and just delete the system preferences and then start launch the application again, you might have to put in the serial number again.
Right.
But it will it'll go back to its original settings on that application. And then, or you can just copy them out. So
right.
then you, if it does solves the problem, you can copy most of them back in and have your old settings back. But it's just a matter of what the philosophy is on each operating
right.
system.
Right.
All right. So we have plenty of calls, 713-526-5738. If you want to get in the queue, you'll have to wait, but we're not, you know what the number is anyway. Groovehouse?
Up next, we've got Pete.
Pete!
Hey, dude, what's going on?
How much? You're on the air. What can we do for you?
Well, what I wanted to find out, I've got a laptop computer that, for some reason or another, the wireless is not working. I go on to the network, go in the system, or go in the control panel, go in the system, and it shows the wireless, the wired network, but it don't show the Wi-Fi.
Well, on many laptops, that can be turned on and off. If you've got the Wi-Fi turned off, that could cause what you're seeing.
Yeah, but see, how do I turn it back on?
Well, what model laptop is this? Is it?
It's a Compaq HP.
Function F8,
uh-huh.
If you look at your F keys, your function keys across the top, one of them probably looks like a little antenna or something.
Uh-huh.
And you hit function in that F8 key, if it's F8, and then that should toggle the wireless from being on to being off.
Okay.
There might also be a little blue light on the HPs that indicate whether the wireless is on. It looks like a little antenna with radiation coming out of it. Like
right.
There's a light that tells you whether the wireless is turned on or off.
Okay.
Do you have
okay.
the laptop in front of you, or are you going to try to remember this?
I'll remember it.
You want to make sure that it's on. You know, it can be toggled on and off, and sometimes the wireless will go into an off mode for whatever reason, and you have to physically just hit the control function key and turn it back on.
Okay.
All
well,
right?
Another question I wanted to find out, why don't they ever make a cyber woman?
They do. His name's Roger.
Roger? Yeah, but does she get naked?
We're naked.
No, never mind.
All right. Talk to you later.
Yeah, have a good one.
You too.
Yeah. Real doll is probably the closest.
That's not cyber. Cyber woman.
Well, or there's those like mechanical receptionists that they have in Japan. Those are kind of creepy, and they are women.
Because being rejected in real life isn't enough.
Do you cyber?
Do I cyber? What are you wearing?
ASL.
Oh man. Come to the Geek Gathering. It only gets better.
Everybody walks around just with their eyes closed going, ASL, ASL.
And a drink in their hand.
Want a cyber?
You're going to wear your shirt?
I want a cyber shirt?
You want a cyber shirt?
I don't have one of those, but maybe I should find
one. Make one.
Get one. You just have 2 days.
Oh, I can make that Sharpie in a white T-shirt.
Silver crayon.
That's right.
All right.
Okay, maybe I will make one of those for the Geek
Gathering.
Flick, it'll be the one with the one a cyber shirt.
Want a cyber shirt.
Yeah, how much? All right.
You take PayPal.
I take credit cards.
Careful, this may trigger a flash mob of 2 to 3 people in white shirts.
You mean a flash man?
Flash man.
Let's take a call.
Groovehouse, take me away.
Let's go all the way to line 4.
All right, line 4 is
Mike.
Mike. You're on the air.
30 words for you, gentlemen. Vista Home Premium.
Uh-huh.
On a Gateway laptop. The problem is user account control.
Right.
I can't turn it off through the control panel. I can't turn it off through MS Config. And it won't let me do things like change an entity name, a username, or add a user.
Sounds like you're not running in an in administrator mode. Sounds like you're
a
standard user.
Now, have you tried running as administrator? You know, you have to sometimes you right click and you can run it in an elevated mode.
Well, I am in the administrator entity.
It does not care. Vista does not care.
I have not tried to right-click.
Right-click on the program, like the control panel or whatever, and click Run As Administrator. I believe you have to run it as administrator. You have to basically, even as administrator, give yourself elevated privileges before you can do certain things.
All right. Well, I will try that.
And you may, and you can, I don't know how granular you have to be, if you can just run the control panel as, or if you have to go into something else and then run it as administrator.
You have to go into the specific item.
Right. You get to the specific item and then right click it and run as administrator and you'll probably be able to do it.
Well, I will try.
Well,
I had heard it might be the virus that got courthouse.
No, the virus that got courthouse, you wouldn't even be able to log in.
Oh, okay. Okay.
All right.
Oh, and one final comment, gentlemen. There are some images that words should not be used to draw into your brain. And you just spent about 45 seconds scaring the pants off of me.
Then it worked.
That's the image. He just gave it back. Thanks for your call, Mike. All right. I don't know where this show is going.
What just happened?
What?
What image?
What image?
I missed it.
Groovehouse naked.
Oh.
You know, they've
look
been
for
all
the ladies.
The good news for this guy is that Windows 7 fixes that problem for him. When you go to do things that you do, where you make changes on your computer as opposed to a program trying to do it, there's no UAC. So when you go and change Windows settings and you are the administrator, you don't have to elevate again. UAC is much appears much less in Windows 7.
I will say this, though, about Vista. I've encountered it on occasion in my support role. It does not seem to have as much spyware problems as Windows XP.
No, it does not.
And that's probably due. I mean, they probably overclocked the protection, but at least, you know, it's safe. You know, Dr. Snell would be happy because he would know it was safe. All right, who's up next?
Up next, we've got George.
George!
Hello there.
George!
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hi.
You're on the air, George.
Okay, I have a question about some equipment from our friends at the phone company. And specifically, this is the two-wire 1070B DSL modem that apparently has some sort of a half-baked router tucked away inside of it. You can only hook up one computer to the thing, but apparently it has some kind of router function so that if you try to use it just as a broadband modem and hook up a router to it, it actually won't work. So I'm calling to inquire as to whether you've encountered this. It seemed to be the thing that they shipped out a lot when they were promoting DSL a year or two ago.
Well, you've had it for a while, or?
I'm sorry, say again?
Have you had this device for a while?
This is a family tech support deal. It's not my equipment. I went over to hook up a router for a family member and discovered, yes, you can hook up the router, but the router won't go anywhere because apparently.
So they've had it for a while.
Huh?
They've had it for a while.
Yes. Yeah, they, indeed. And it's, if you go to the two-wire website, they say, well, you got to get any details and support from your provider. If you go to AT&T, they say, we don't really have anything about this.
If you do a Google search for two-wire 1070B,
yeah,
the very first item that comes up is a DSL Reports GeekGathering.com forum item on running the two-wire 1070B in bridge mode,
okay,
which is what you want.
How much is this family paying you, by the way, to get this set up?
I think I might get a glass of iced tea if it works out.
All right.
Well, there are step-by-step instructions for hooking this up. I don't know what the if you mention the name of the router you're trying to connect to it, but it's a it has instructions on putting it into bridge mode,
okay,
with a Linksys WRT54G, which is a very common router.
Okay.
And it shows you what you need to do in both devices. So, you know, you can probably figure out what you need to do easily in the other router, but this shows you what to do with the 1070B.
Yeah, because the 1070B is essentially undocumented equipment, or at least there's no publicly available documentation that I can find from the phone company folks. Right. Okay, well, that's a very big help. In fact, I'm now looking at that very same page on my screen here, so I'll read through that, and it looks like that's going to basically sort it out for me.
Great.
All right, thank you.
Have a good night. Thanks, George. All right, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. You can talk to the Groove House entity on the other end of the phone as he preps you for your airtime. For the ladies, they love that.
Better one or better two? Better one or two?
Better two or better three? Who's up next?
Up next, we've got Bill.
That's better five. Bill!
Hey!
Bill!
It's Planner's Bill. So, you know, there's children listening to this.
You're a Planner's Peanut to me.
There's children listening to this show, you know.
Are they yours, or do you know?
No, they're children of the 70s, you young whippersnapper. You turn this show around and take it to Cuba.
You know, yeah, that is the 70s.
For old people, that's a reference to hijacking.
Yeah, back when they used to just land the plane and not crash into
it. Yeah, really.
All right, so...
I actually have a problem.
Oh, you're telling me.
And part of it, I had to.
Is your lovely wife listening too? Is she one of the children?
She is listening. Yes.
Okay, so there's more than just a few children.
Yes, that's all true. Right. She is the ultimate child.
So what's your problem, Bill? I mean, besides
okay, I'm running Parallels Desktop on a MacBook Pro.
MacBook.
And I had 2.5.
Are you listening up?
Parallels 2.5, I upgraded to 4. And I was I'm running Windows XP in that in Parallels, and when you would press hit start, the little window that comes up would be black on the right side. It would have, like, on the left the programs, the icons of the programs that I'd used, but the part that was my computer and all that was black. So I ended up reinstalling XP. And then I couldn't get AVG to download the AVG 8 that I had installed. I couldn't get it to download any new virus definitions. So I did the uninstall with the AVG software and tried to reinstall it again, and or actually went out and saw they had 8.5. So I downloaded that, put it on, and I keep getting a message that says something about they can't confirm the serial number.
If you got 8.5, what I think you have is not necessarily the free version, but you have the trial version of the full release. And so where you want to go to get the free version, I think you installed the wrong thing, basically. And it's essentially your free time is up. So what you want to do...
Okay, now I did just install this like yesterday.
Oh, and it's still showing that?
Yeah, I never could get it to install.
Did you get it from free.avg.com?
You know, I got it from a screen that had on the right side, or left side, I thought it was 8.5 that was free. And then, and they had an offer, like it could be free if I bought some other program or something like that.
Well, what they like to do is they try to tell you, like when you go to get the free version of these programs, sometimes they'd say, well, why don't you get the trial version of the full version of our software? and it'll be free for 90 days, and you can choose to buy it. So what?
I did see that, and I thought I avoided that trap, but they're pretty crafty on that side.
No, I think that's what he did, because the AVG free is not 8.5. So if
it's
you got 8.5, you got the wrong version. So uninstall that and go back to free.avg.com. Click on the left side of the screen, not the right side.
Okay, okay.
The left side, and that's how you get it. Yeah. You have the wrong version.
So go to free.avg.com.
Right. Yeah, and just, you know, they'll compare the two versions even at free.avg.com. The one on the right is the commercial version. The one on the left is the free version.
Well, I thought, too, that I came across some antivirus thing that works in the Mac OS and in Windows fairly recently, and I'm wondering, Mac seemed to be a little more vulnerable than they used to be. Do you know anything about that?
I haven't heard of one that works in both.
No, I don't
Is
think
Symantec or McAfee making one?
Well, Symantec and McAfee both make versions of their software that are designed for the Mac OS, but it doesn't. It's not like one executable you can put in either one. Running AVG is fine. You know, once you get the right version, that's really good at running when you're running in Parallels or VMware Fusion, because it really has a small footprint, doesn't take up a lot of memory.
Okay, and that's what I had been running 7.5
right,
before.
I would just go, make sure you get 8, the free version, and not 8.5.
Got it. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome, Mel.
Have a great evening. Bye.
You too. All righty.
You know, I've been searching, and I can't find anywhere online that I can buy a Wanna Cyber T-shirt.
I think there's a market there. I think you've identified a market.
I'm searching. Yes, indeed.
I think putting in T-shirt into Google is really, really important when you go to search for that.
You're getting a lot of pay sites, right?
I put in shirt, so I got a lot of... I'm taking off my shirt. Wanna cyber? If you search for this, it's really hilarious. There was a guy, this got passed around a lot. It's a guy that would, like, do jokes on people in IM chat, and he went by J-Dog, Blood Ninja.
Oh, is that the guy with the pirate and the...
stuff. Like, he says, Wanna cyber? And they're like, yeah, and he's like, I'm a rhinoceros, and the girl's like, I'm taking off your shirt. Rhinoceros don't wear shirts. Okay, I'm taking off your pants. I'm getting mad and snorting. I'm going to run at you. I mean, it's somewhat offensive sometimes, but it is hilarious. Because, I mean, he just totally plays these people, and it's great. I mean, there's probably 20 or 30 transcripts of him talking with different people, including... one time where he went to do that with somebody and he'd forgotten that he had done that to them before.
They're like,
wait, just a second, aren't you? And he's like, oh man, and he's like, yeah, he disconnects.
Offensive to Ryan.
I did find a Cyber Sex Rocks shirt. And if you do Wanna Cyber and Google image search.
I put Wanna Cyber in double quotes. And then shirt. And, yeah, I wasn't getting any hits for shirt.
Wanna cyber shirt and Google Images might get you to someplace that might have one. At least you can preview what they're showing. You know, or you might even get to cyber. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. If you'd like to be on the air tonight, we got two calls in the queue. Plenty of open lines, so dial in. Don't be afraid. Who's up next, Groovehouse?
Up next, we've got mild-mannered Clark.
Clark!
What's happening, guys?
Not much. What's up?
Rolling through beautiful Sealy, Texas. Just picked y'all up, coming from Austin to Beaumont. This has got to be one of the most interesting technology shows. I mean, Kim Commando would be proud.
Yay! Most nights we're a comic book program.
I have two very brief questions, and judging by the topic of conversation, I hesitated to use the word brief with you two.
We're boxer men. It's cool.
I have. I'm wanting to spend about $600-$700 to build a desktop computer. No monitor, any of that. Just a core system. Any highlights on good, bad, otherwise parts to use?
Well, I mean, why are? Let's ask the real question. Why do you want to build a computer? Because for $600, you can build a computer that you could probably buy for $300 already built.
Really?
Yeah, the major manufacturers get their parts. They buy them in bulk, so they can build these computers for cheaper than what you can do a one-off of. So, seriously, building your own is more of, if you want to nitpick about what you're getting in terms of all the components and you want to have the experience of building it yourself, you're paying a premium to do that right now.
Okay, well, then I guess a better question would be for $600-$700, give me a couple of desktops that I'm not going to have to worry about putting any new hard drives, RAM, or video cards in a year. That I can use.
Well, I tell you, I've got desktops that are, you know, that are still running fine 5 years later, you know. I mean, it just depends on what you're going to do with them.
Yeah, what do you do with your computers?
I've recently gotten into scuba diving videos.
We don't recommend putting them in the water.
Especially a desktop. You want at least to go in the water.
I've put in some video editing just for my underwater videos and underwater photography, and don't do a lot of high-end gaming, you know.
Image processing primarily and storage?
Correct.
Well, you know, the current range of PCs right now, you can probably get for around $300, $350, get a computer that's got anywhere from 250 gigs of storage to half a terabyte and 2 gigs of RAM, and it's going to be fine.
Okay.
And it's going to be a dual core, and it's going to be, what kind of computer do you have now?
I've got an HP and a Dell at the house right now.
How old are they?
The HP is probably 2 years old. The Dell's probably 2.5 years old.
Are they not performing well for you?
No, the Dell is still, well, really both of them. I mean, God bless it. It takes forever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even a couple of year old, they're not going to be dual core, and they're probably going to have like a gig or less of RAM. But you can probably save yourself some money by reloading those systems with the install disks that came with them and bumping up the RAM, maybe, and then get yourself an external hard drive for storing your image files.
I did that. I got a 500 gig external. I upgraded the RAM. I maxed out the gig on a Dell. And am I going to get any benefit with going to a dual core or any of that?
Well, it depends. What are you processing your images with?
I've got an Adobe program running for most of it.
Are you shooting in RAW? Or are you shooting JPEG?
RAW.
What's your workflow like?
2, 3, 4 megabytes per minute or MPS, whatever that means.
Well, no, but how many images do you like to have open up in, say, Photoshop at a time? It's like what I do when I'm processing my raw images, I like to take about 20 raw images, drop them into my raw editor, and go through and process them before, you know, developing them.
If I tried to load 20 images right now, I'd be talking all next week.
All right. Most of the current crop of computers are going to do that just fine if you get up around 2 gigs of RAM or better.
Okay.
And the dual core, you don't really have a choice. You're going to get dual core or quad core in all of your current Windows-based PCs right now.
Any brand names to look for clear of?
No, it's hard. I don't have the kind of budget that allows me to go out and buy the current crop of computers from all the different manufacturers every year.
Well, the key thing is like go to a big box computer store of whatever type, or go online. And then look at ones that look promising. I mean, you can go to the websites for major computer manufacturers and look at the ones that can figure up that look promising to you. And then take that model number and do a Google search and maybe add the word review. So, you know, manufacturer X is, you know, JX27D model review, and you'll see what people are saying about them. You'll, or if you do that model and put problem, then you'll see if there's a lot of if they keep coming up, if they have the same problem, and you see lots of people posting about it, and you don't see lots of solutions posted about it, then avoid it. But most of the time, this stuff is a commodity now, so it's very rare if you buy from a brand name, you know, buy from a major manufacturer, that you're going to get something that's going to be a dog.
And
the odds are no higher based on one model or one manufacturer over another.
Right, and the warranties are going to protect you from some of that as well. That's another reason for buying like a from a name brand manufacturer as opposed to doing it yourself. I mean, all of this, if you build your own computer, all the components will be under warranty, but you're dealing with individual vendors to get that satisfied if something goes wrong. But if you buy a pre-manufactured computer from Dell or HP or something like that, then if something fails and it's under warranty, you call Dell or HP and say, hey, you know, make this right.
So for the $700 I want to spend, I have no desire to go through the satisfaction process of building my own. I can spend half as much and get just as good a computer.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
The new Windows version that's coming out.
Windows 7?
Is that out? When is it coming out? Is it?
The beta, the first public beta has been out since January.
Okay.
It's pretty stable for a beta. It works really well. I'm using it as my primary Windows operating system at the moment.
But you can't buy a computer with it on there.
No, you cannot buy a computer with it on there.
I could download the beta.
Right, but actually you can't anymore. They've withdrawn it, but you can probably find somebody who has a disk.
Okay.
But the release candidate should be out any time, probably in the next, I'd say by the end of April you have a release candidate. Most of the rumblings about its release looks around September.
Yeah.
Okay.
So probably by the time, you know, the Christmas shopping season starts cranking up, it'll be on machines in the store. It is essentially a really polished, fixed version of Vista. It runs really well. It runs a lot better than Vista. Has a much smaller footprint in terms of memory. And, you know, if you get a new machine, it will install on top of Vista pretty nicely, the beta. But be aware, you are working with the beta.
Right, but you haven't had a lot of conflict problems or...
Well, it's the same caveats apply. If you're going from XP to Windows 7, programs that work in XP that are broken by Vista will break in Windows 7.
Okay.
Particularly things like disk utilities, antivirus programs, the things that traditionally break going from one... from one operating system to another. However, if you're going from Vista to Windows 7, it's a lot smoother. In fact, I've been using drivers for Vista in Windows 7, and they work quite well.
Okay. Well, guys, I'm going to hang up with you. I'll let you get to the next caller and turn my radio back up because y'all are great technology, so thanks for the information.
Well, thanks for the call tonight.
Yeah, have a good one.
All right, you too. I didn't ask him the one question I was actually curious about. Why two computers? Not just one beefy one.
He has two hands.
Eastbound and down.
He wants the Aqua Cyber.
on IRC actually found a Wanna Cyber set of clothing on a Cafe Press. But
Foo is stronger than you.
He just created it, though, and he's just trying to...
I'm somewhat confused, though, because one of the offerings is a... one of the offerings is a classic thong that says Wanna Cyber. So I'm confused by...
Oh, there's a mental image I don't want.
When you would wear that. You're like, you know, you're like, getting the clothes, and then the... It says Wanna Cyber. It's like, get away from me. Wanna Cyber?
You're already this close.
I don't want the
Let's
real
move
thing.
Further away.
Wanna Cyber?
I think you're thinking about this.
Do story. Not want.
Wanna Cyber fail. Yeah.
Let's just cyber instead.
Did you bring your laptop?
You go home and get on your computer, and we'll talk then.
Suppose you're like old school and pass notes back and forth to each other.
It's nine, but when we come back from Barrett time, I want to add to that call because I'm looking at rebuilding the inside of a machine, and I'm finding some interesting thing about pricing. I think if you're buying a whole machine, you can indeed get a pretty good deal, but if you just want to rebuild components, parts are really cheap right now, and I've found some really interesting things as I've done this research.
All right.
Did your search include cyber?
Yeah. And that's not cheap.
Then let us let you know that you are listening to Technology Bites here on KPFTs, and we're going to be with you till 10 o'clock tonight, near the top of the hour, so we're doing this little break. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And I'm Groovehouse.
For the baying dogs.
For the cyber.
For the stray cats.
And now it's time for Barrett time.
Hey, Barrett. What's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
Alright. If anyone heard a whooshing sound early Monday morning, it may not have been the sound of missed deadlines, but rather an asteroid named 2009 DD48, buzzing the Earth at a distance of 48,000 miles above the surface, just roughly twice the distance that communication satellites orbit the planet, and only one-fifth the distance to the moon. The hunk of rock in question is about the same size as the one that did hit us back in 1908, leveling over 800 square miles of Siberian forest. As far as I know, Bruce Willis and Ben Affleck had nothing to do with the asteroid missing the Earth, though no one in the mainstream media news is saying they deny any involvement either.
But it does, it came so close that NASA has a picture where you can clearly read the Wanna Cyber on the thong. The thong on the asteroid.
Ooh. Oh, wow, I have no idea how to follow that. Anyway,
just keep going.
Yeah,
quickly.
Just keep going.
Quickly.
Got that thong.
Don't stop and look.
Yeah. Anyway,
we drill.
So, I was gonna say, like, if you're in the mood to celebrate geek life after this quasi near miss, but apparently this one hit us head on. But still, you can do so in earnest just a couple of days. This Friday, March 6th is the first Friday of the month, meaning it's time for another geek gathering. We'll be back at the Coffee Grounds in Midtown Houston this Friday night. From a little after 7 o'clock until rather late the last few months. There's an indoor area, complete with power and Wi-Fi. A patio in the back is where most people find a home once they've held court with Flicted, though you may have to fend for your own power, so be sure to come fully charged. In that same vein, if you've got some small tech, small enough to fit in a pocket or a backpack, bring it out. We're talking anything from an interesting-looking thumb drive to KD5's kit of lights to any new smartphones or smartphone apps. Just bring it out. The Coffee Ground is located at 2503 Bagby near McGowan in real life, and www.coffeegrounds.net. That's with a Z on the interweb. That's right, the coffee shop with the .net. That gives them points as well as the Z in the spelling of the grounds. They do spell the V T-H-E instead of T-H, but we've got hope. They serve coffee, tea, beer, and liquor, as well as sandwiches and gelato. Pretty sure there's a tech sneeze guard up, so no worries about the gelato references early in the show. What you do have to worry about is parking on McGowan after 9 p.m. Don't do it. You'll get owned by the tow truck company. Tow trucks aside, we do encourage you to come out and hang with Jay Lee and the crew before potentially continuing your geek night at other destinations. And if you still find yourself in need of a dance partner the next morning, you may want to take some Samba lessons at HalPC. Samba is the Linux-based Windows file server, not the Brazilian six-step. That happens at 2 p.m. at HalPC near 610 in San Felipe. www.hal-pc.org for details and directions, as well as a list of other special interest group meetings happening that weekend. That's it for your Friday night 411, complete with Saturday morning support, and that's that for Barrett time.
Yay!
I do want to see a comet shopped with a little green bikini that says "Want a Cyber" by Friday. I think that'd be pretty cool.
No, you know,
so I've got it in my head. It's turned in there now. It won't go away. So.
If a comet had a T-shirt, it would probably say "Want to Perish." All right, Dwight, you want to say something?
It's Dwight time.
It's Dwight time. Dwight time. Dwight. Night, night. Yay!
I need to get my own theme music.
What you gonna do with Jesus goodbye?
There you go. So I'm gonna rebuild the guts of my Windows box, which has an old Pentium 3.4 gigahertz processor in it and a Intel 915 chipset. It's like about 4 years old. And I thought that I was, you know, going to have to really cheap out on the parts. I had set myself a limit of $300 to replace the inside of it. And in doing the research for this, I'm just amazed at how inexpensive motherboards and processors and memory. I mean, we knew about memory, right? Memory is like, you know, $50 for 4 gig is easy right now. But I'm finding really good motherboards that allow for game overclocking and have fast system bus and, you know, a lot of really nice features for under $100. And processors, quad core processors that are under $150. So it looks like for like about $280, I'm going to be able to rebuild the guts of this machine and have a much more powerful system than I thought I would. Probably going to go with an AMD Phenom processor, maybe a Phenom 2, and either a Gigabyte or a Asus motherboard, and, you know, 4 gigs of, you know, RAM from a generic RAM from like Crucial.com, and I'll be smoking on this machine. I'll keep the drives and the video card I have. But, you know, if you just want to replace the guts of it, and not the case, the power supply, the drives, the other components, you can do pretty good right now.
Well, I think, yeah, we're getting to that point where Moore's Law, you know, where the horsepower for what you pay for it cuts in half, mm-hmm. and the power doubles, has gotten to the point where, you know, a cheapo home-built computer has specs that, you know, 3 years ago people would have spent
right.
$3,000 or $4,000 on.
Well, if I was buying a case and the drives, you would quickly get up mm-hmm. past the point where you could, you know, buy this machine at retail. But if you're kind of selective and you have a machine, you know, it's kind of hard sometimes to upgrade like a Dell's and HP's. Sometimes the motherboards are proprietary configurations and it won't work in that case. But, you know, if you have something that's generic, look at, you know, redoing the guts of it before you go out and buy a whole new one.
The Bali Lama is indicating that he downloaded the latest version of AVG, and he's getting a problem with the serial number when he tries to install it. Says there's a problem confirming the serial number, and it cancels the install.
So I wonder if there's a problem with the latest build of the AVG free.
Or I wonder if it's because there's remnants of the non-free version on there or something.
That could be. He may need to do a... He may need to go
if you
in.
Didn't uninstall it, be sure you uninstall it, and also make sure you go in and clean out the AVG directory and delete those files.
I think AVG is one of those programs that asks if you want to delete all the configuration files. If I remember, it is.
You're right.
Yes.
So when you go to do the uninstall,
say yes.
But if he's already uninstalled it and he can't get the other one installed because of the serial problem, then he may be stuck.
Yeah.
Now, how hard is it? I mean, I understand if I remember from the call. Bill was running Windows in Parallels on a Mac. You could try using a restore point inside
there
of Windows.
May be a restore point, or if he did a snapshot, one of the things that Parallels will do is actually take a snapshot that's kind of more than just a restore point.
Right.
It's the state of the whole system at that time, and then you can come back from that snapshot. Parallels 4 will auto-take snapshots, so if he has that turned on, he may be capturing it and not know it. So you may want to do that.
Okay.
So I just want to mention on IRC that they're trying to rewrite the Shaft theme song for your theme music.
That Dwight, I hear he's a real moth.
Shut your mouth. Just talking about Dwight.
Who the cat won't cop out when there's danger.
I would be so honored. I just have just a warm afterglow. Anybody got a cigarette?
713-526-5738. Now, if you do get a Technology Bites theme song, you can't use it on your more and more frequent appearances on This Week in Texas.
Yeah.
This Week in Tech?
No, I like calling it This Week in Texas after the gay newsletter out there.
That's what I think.
I'm not sure Leo
it.
Even knows about that.
We should turn it on. Let's send him a copy.
This from Twit Magazines.
Is it still out? Is it still around?
I don't know. I don't know if it is or not.
I think it is.
Would you check that?
He's very sensitive about the Twit brand. He was very upset at Twitter. And for a while, got off of Twitter because it used the name Twit.
No.
And
he's trying to take back Twit, or what's?
yeah. He was kind of, you know, but now he's back on Twitter. He's fine with it, but he kind of just doesn't like.
Maybe you should change it to About Tech instead of In Tech.
What?
The guy on the Daily Show actually said that word when he was talking about Twitter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Talk about Dwight. Talk about Twitter. All right, who's up next, Groovehouse?
Up next, we've got Max.
Hey, Max, you need to start shredding your documents now, destroy any hard drives, and get out of the house.
Get out.
Go.
I'm trying to, but I don't know which way to go now.
Go out the window.
No, I've got questions concerning RAID setup.
I thought we just told you.
RAID?
Get out.
RAID, yes.
You got a roach problem in your computer?
They are. Well, I think it is. It's RAID is not one to function properly. It's always giving me errors or that it's degraded. So I'm thinking of moving away from it and was trying to get some options.
So you're trying to run RAID 5, I assume?
No, actually just RAID 1.
Huh. Okay.
It checks in, but it doesn't check out.
Do you have a RAID card or is it on the main board?
No, it's just running off a NVIDIA motherboard. So that's probably one of the issues.
Is it SATA or IDE?
SATA.
SATA.
Well, if it's mirrored, can't you just remove one of the members and just run with one?
I try that, but every time I put them back together, it still just keeps having errors. And I guess from what I've been looking up and reading about, it's just the NVIDIA motherboards just have issues with that. So a couple options I was thinking of doing was either without going full out and just getting a NAS, taking one of my older systems and setting it up as a NAS, you know, just pulling out my hard drives and my dedicated system and set it out there, throw Linux on it, and set it up like that. Or I was also wondering, make it even simpler, using the Microsoft Simple Toy software. Just kind of get the input from you guys, see what y'all think.
What Microsoft software?
The Sync Toy. What it's called.
I'm not familiar with that. I don't know if anybody else is.
I'm not.
No. Mm-mm. Blanks all around.
when you use the RAID, what is your primary goal? I mean, when you consider how you want to run your computer system, are you just really looking to just keep going, pull a hard drive out, put another hard drive in, have it restripe and just go? Or are you just more interested in preserving your data? Could you maybe look at a different kind of backup solution?
Well, I have one. I run Carbonite.
Okay.
And then I run an external as well.
I mean, if you can't troubleshoot your own RAID issues, then RAID may not be a solution for you.
Right.
Because if you can't be confident in what you've deployed and know that it's working, it may not be providing you with the security that you're wanting from it.
Right.
That's one of the reasons. I mean, I will frankly tell you right up, I don't run RAID on my home computer because I don't really have the time or the inclination to investigate it and understand it to the level that I think I would need to be able to have it be an effective solution for me. So what I do is I use a different backup program or solution to just back up the files that I care about, and I'm prepared, should things come worse to worse, to just reinstall the operating system. Really, the only files I care about are the ones that I create, my image files, my documents, and so forth. As long as I've got a copy of that somewhere, then if my system goes down, I can always just reinstall my operating system and my applications, install the drivers, and then reload my data.
Right.
So I don't know what to tell you on the problem that you're having. If you say it's right off the motherboard, you might consider getting a dedicated RAID controller if you're interested in that.
Right.
But otherwise, maybe look at some other type of backup solution to just protect your data and move forward.
Okay.
All right, Max?
Sounds good, man.
All right, thanks for your call.
Thank y'all.
All right. 713-526-5738. Are you running RAID on anything besides server class machines, Flickton?
Not exactly. I helped somebody set up a RAID on a Mac, and then we moved it to a Linux box. But that was actually set up with a hardware PCIX card. So, and it uses the processor some, but it's also doing some stuff on the card. It was SATA based. It was 8 SATAs to set up a big RAID 5 volume. So it's not really like enterprise class, but that those RAID cards weren't cheap either. I mean, they were still $250 or something RAID cards.
Isn't kind of the easiest way to get RAID for at home to get an external that's already set up with RAID and you hook
it
up?
Yeah, it's like an appliance is the best way to go. Because otherwise, I really don't like software RAID, because the way you want to go about RAID is it's supposed to like show up as a single disk to the operating system. And with software-based RAID, it doesn't do that. It has to jump through a whole lot of hoops. So if you get a RAID card, the way that's supposed to work is it really does show up as a single drive, so you don't get a lot of the problems that you do when you start to get into software RAID. And just like Jay said, it's not worth the trouble on software RAID. Especially if you're going for reliability and something you can bring up really quickly, it's not necessarily there. So definitely, you know, either skip it altogether or go with an appliance or go with the hardware.
The other thing now is that, I mean, hard drives have gotten so big and technology has gotten cheap enough that, I mean, if you really just don't have any money and you just want to play with it, then, yeah, you know, you can get some hard drives you have and install them, you know, on some kind of card and then do software RAID. And it'll, you know, it. But I wouldn't trust it as much.
Right.
And it's not going to give you the performance because it's going to have to be using the processor of the system to do it. And so the prices have gotten cheap enough now that if you have some money to spend, it's almost convenient and easier to just go buy a pre-built hardware like Buffalo Tech or somebody RAID external RAID volume. You just hook it up. It's running. Usually they're running like some stripped down Linux kernel, and it just appears as NAS. Basically, it's network attached storage straight on your network.
It really seems, unless you're running a server where you're wanting that, you know, where data is changing in real time and you're wanting as close to a bad event. You want the data captured. Most people, you don't do enough that a good like daily or regular backup. I've become hooked on Apple's Time Machine thing. It just works in the background. I usually hook it up to an external hard drive. That's going to be close enough. The RAID thing to keep your data secure and all that stuff. You know, if that was really the way, if that was really a great solution, I think we would see a lot more mainstream vendors offering computers with it already in it, as opposed to where you have to order it special.
Right.
You know, if you were a big Photoshopper, so you want the speed benefit from a RAID, okay, I get that, or video. But that's that tiny sliver of people who will go and buy, you know, a top-of-the-line Mac Pro, too. You know, and that's not normal. That's not most people.
Well, I think, like you said, you made a really good point, and that is, you know, really incremental backups for the average user tend to be plenty.
Because the data you're worried about losing is that thing that you've had for 18 months, you know, the picture from the party with the person that you won't see for a while or whatever, not what you typed in Word yesterday.
Well, you know, the whole idea of, like, you know, a hardware RAID was the idea that, you know, on a server-class machine, if you're running an Exchange server, if you're running a file server and your drive goes bad, the idea with a RAID 5 or whatever is to be able to pull that mm-hmm. bad drive out, put another one in, and you're still going. You're not down rebuilding the machine. That's what that was, you know, designed for. That's
right.
The way that I've seen it.
Well, and to give you one larger volume than the drives at the time would give you. That was another thing that it would give you.
But again, all this is like enterprise level stuff. I mean, even like our servers, I don't RAID every single server, and the servers that we do RAID, we still back them up. That's not a backup solution. That's just like if something.
But
goes
it
down.
Is pretty nice though if you can do RAID 1 to get a mirror. So if one hard drive fails, you can break the mirror and then boot off the one that's still working. The problem with RAID sometimes is, well, there's a number of problems with it. but the problem is if two hard drives fail at the same time on RAID 5, for example, that does happen from time to time, especially if you bought all the hard drives at the same time. Sometimes the mean time between failure is accurate, and when one starts failing, they're all going to start failing. Sometimes, and if you don't change them out pretty quick, you can get a scenario where you've lost two. And then you better have backups because your RAID's not going to save you. The other thing is that sometimes you will have a hardware problem, which will, and this has happened to me before, or to companies I work for, you have the controller fail or some piece of hardware fail, and it will spew garbage onto all the drives. You better have backups because your RAID 5 isn't helping you, and neither is your mirror. So, I mean, there's scenarios where it's not necessarily just the solution.
But it comes back to my point that, like, unless you're willing and ready to understand how it works, and it's not just something you go, oh, yeah, blah, 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 there's your RAID. Mm-hmm. You have to research it. You have to understand what the technology is behind it and how it works to realize, you know, to make a determination on whether or not it's a suitable solution. What about the Windows Home servers that have been floating around, the little external appliances for, are those RAID? Are those pre-configured or set up in some type of RAID array?
The only one that I know of is the HP MediaSmart server, and I think that is pre-configured as RAID.
I think some of these NAS, you know, the network storage,
are
RAID. Yeah.
RAID.
Yeah, the other
I've got a little Buffalo Link mini station. It's actually, it's a 500 gig NAS drive.
It's like three drives.
It's two 250s, and they're notebook drives. They're notebook size drives. And those are automatically, they come with RAID. You can reconfigure them, but they're set up essentially to be the larger size.
See, that's kind of another thing about RAID is part of the reason that it was developed back then also was for speed, specifically RAID 5. I mean, writing to RAID 5 isn't so fast, but reading from RAID 5 is pretty fast. And so they did that because you could split up onto multiple spindles, and then you're reading, instead of reading one at a time in serial, you're reading eight at a time, or how many ever spindles. The more spindles you've got, the faster you can get your data off. But a lot of RAID now, like, stuff has gotten so fast that in a lot of instances it doesn't matter anymore. You're not getting that amazing of a speed increase. Maybe if you're working, like, with huge images or something, but in most cases most people aren't doing that. And a lot of people now are setting up RAID with, like, three disks or four disks. And so you're going to see some speed increase with a RAID 5, but not like if you have got 8 or 12 or 16 spindles spinning.
So there you have it.
Probably a little bit too late, but RAID stands for redundant array of inexpensive disks, just for everyone scratching their head and going, what?
It used to stand, originally it stood for redundant array of inexpensive disks. Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's what I thought I said.
Oh, sorry.
Independent. Independent, oh.
Right?
Because it's all kind
of... I think it was the I. Now. One of them changed. It used to stand... I think
probably
it was I. It used to stand for inexpensive, and now it stands for independent, or maybe the other way around. I don't remember. I think that was the one that changed, though.
When
disks got all got cheap,
yeah.
Then they got rid of the word inexpensive and changed it to independent.
Maybe. I just would have made it rad.
713-526-5738. About half an hour left in the show tonight, but that's plenty of time, you know, unless we get off on a tangent. So we're all wearing pants and talking RAID. Let's move on to the next thing. What do we got, Groove House?
Up next, Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
What can we do for you tonight?
Doing fine as well. I'm actually a second-time listener, and I bought a Mac Dual 1.8 gigahertz from Craigslist. I love it. I mean, it's great for our studio. I have a second one in our studio as well. One of my problems is, watching YouTube videos and other videos like on Hulu is the buffering. Is there anything on my end that I can do to minimize the instances of buffering on my system?
Ooh, that often
that's bandwidth,
that's network issues,
yeah.
Or else it's either memory on your computer or network, you know, bandwidth between your house and Hulu or wherever.
How much memory you have in your Mac?
I bumped it up to 5 gigabytes now.
Well, then it's probably not that. And
how are you connected to the internet?
And that was the other thing. It was a DSL modem through our cable provider. So what I did was, you know, because sometimes the speeds are terribly slow, I went and bought one.
Well, let me ask you this, though. I mean, you're connected to the internet. Is it DSL or cable?
DSL.
All right. Are you connected directly to the modem, or do you have a router?
The router.
All right. Are you connected to the router wirelessly or wired?
Wired.
Okay. So you're running an Ethernet cable to the router. Router's connected to the modem. And you're getting bad internet speed performance?
Yes. It's very intermittent. Sometimes it's very great. I guess it's sometimes during the day. And at night, I guess when everybody's using it,
if there's too much fluctuation in your actual internet connectivity, that's going to affect watching things like videos, which require a steady stream of data going back and forth between your computer and the internet. Also, some videos, if they're more popular, are going to be slower. I mean, I've hit some YouTube videos that load up and play no problem. I've hit others that just, you know, they pause, they buffer, they play for a while, they buffer for a while. So that could be server side, so you don't know for sure at any given time whether or not that's an issue with your connection or with the video that you're
watching.
What
I would say is next time you're doing it and you start getting the buffering problem,
okay,
go to Google and do a lookup on like internet speed test,
right,
and find one of those results where one of those places where what happens is usually it's flash based or browser based. You can click the button and it will test like the latency between you and some server in New York or Dallas or other places.
It gives you an idea of how fast your internet connection really is, taking things out of the equation, like whether that video server is slow or not. It does a very flat test of how fast your internet is.
And if it's DSL and your performance is very low, I think because that's the phone company, then they have a lot stricter terms of service where they have to offer you what they say they're offering.
Okay.
And there's uptime stuff and all that with it. So you may, you know, when you check that a few times, if you call them, then hopefully they will send somebody out to deal with the issue.
Okay, and I also got one of those, those Sprint USB devices that plugs in, you know, like when I'm using it on my laptop. So I use that sometimes, and it kind of...
That's likely to be slower than your DSL, though.
Yeah, I've kind of noticed that. It's not any better in some instances.
So,
And is there anything about the kernel tabs that I can impact, or is it just something that's a systemic thing that I just can't impact whatsoever? Like when I'm looking on my activity monitor, I see like 1.69 gigabytes for the kernel task.
That's kind of, I don't think there's anything big with that.
Now, the computer, was it bought used?
Yeah, I bought it used.
Now, did you reload the system software, or is it just take it as...
No, I kept it as it is, which is probably why I'm having a problem changing the short name to something else.
Well, you also don't know what the previous owner has done to the computer, so it may have software issues going on as well. So, I mean, I would do you have the recovery disks to be able to reload the software?
And it's the older version, so I think I need to go ahead and get the more newer one anyway.
At any rate, do you have the actual recovery disks for this computer?
No, I don't.
All right, because you'll need something at some point. But my recommendation is to not try to run a used computer with the load of software that was given, you know, on it when you got it, because you don't know what problems you're inheriting.
Does it have Leopard or Tiger? Do you know?
Just the Tiger.
What you may want to do is take the opportunity, go get the latest version of the Mac OS, install that.
Okay, I can do that. And do you guys also subscribe to that device that allows you to plug in the Ethernet to a little wall socket and the other extension plugs to a wall socket, and thereby you connect that computer to it, and it basically feeds through the house.
Power line networking.
Ethernet.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything bad about it. I mean, it's not been super popular, not lots and lots of people using it.
I think people are a little nervous about plugging their Ethernet cables into
think a couple of people have called in and said that they've been using it on the show, and I don't remember them complaining about it, but I don't know anybody personally who's using it.
Yeah, Twitter closed down. I closed their business. They sold me one for about $10, so I bought it. So I've basically been using that, but I just thought maybe that was impacting. But I guess you're right, just to go ahead and do the operating system upgrade and run the test like you suggested.
Yeah, because between those two things, if it's still doing it, then it may just mean you need to upgrade your internet connection.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, you guys.
All right, thanks for your call.
Good luck. Mm-hmm.
All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us tonight. Groovehouse has been kind of idle, not taking so many calls here.
His one lonely caller.
One is the loneliest caller that you'll ever hear. All right, let's talk to the one and only caller that we have. But
that would be Michael.
Michael!
Yes, sir.
How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I'll do better if you guys can fix it. My wife has approximately 2003 Gateway desktop, and she started getting overheating deals where it was shutting the computer off.
Mm.
Okay, so I took out the cooling fan, and sure enough, there's lots of dust bunnies and stuff, and I got it all cleaned up and stuff and plugged it all back in, and the overheating came back and stuff. Well, one of the guys at work said, you know, you need to make sure you get that compound that goes from the heat sink to the cooling fan. And so I got some at Radio Shack, put it on there, and put it back in, still overheated. And then when I pulled out the fan the next time, it pulled the CPU out with it. And so now when I try to, I got it positioned properly and put it back in, but I don't think it's sitting properly because I don't get anything on the screen now. It won't start back up and stuff.
Yeah, if you yank the CPU and it did not come out gracefully or you're not getting it back in there correctly, you may have damaged the CPU.
If one of those pins stayed behind.
Yeah, if a pin bent or broke.
Or bent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long should they be?
Well, they're all kind of...
They should all be the same length.
Well,
yeah.
You'll know if they're long. I mean, they...
It's like an eighth of an inch, maybe?
Yeah, okay. Well, that's what it looked like. But I saw a deal in, like, Computer Shopper said it has, like, I guess, like, the same type of spring clamps or release deals that, like, the spring or the cooling fan had that... To put the processing in.
But if you damage the slot, what was that, socket 4 or whatever?
Yeah.
Socket 7?
Socket 7. If you damage that actual slot when you yanked it out, does it have like, is that, I haven't looked at one in a long time, does it have the little lever for removing the.
Well, see, I didn't pull the lever to get it out, it just came out with it.
Right.
But I don't know if I pulled the lever to put it back in.
Yeah, you would need, most of the socket ones have a lever on the side that slides the top a little bit in one direction so that the CPU can drop, all the little pins can drop in there, and you push the lever back down, which holds it in place.
Okay, well...
But if you pulled it out without moving the lever...
Yeah,
you might have damaged the thing that puts that chip into place.
Right, but you definitely wouldn't be able to put it back in
with
unless it was broken
in.
With the lever down, because it should have closed itself up pretty much. You would need to pop the lever to get the CPU back in and then push the lever back down.
If you could put the CPU in without moving the lever, then you got a problem. Unfortunately.
Well, but my second question is, what can I do to get a new fan? Because I went to Fry's and told them I had a Pentium R4 processor, and they gave me a cooling fan with the heat sink in it, but it was a lot bigger, and the one on the Gateway has like a slight tilt to it and a smaller heat sink. And anyhow, it didn't fit. Okay, it won't fit in the case and stuff, and I was just wondering, that's my second question is, where can I get a cooling fan, and would that be my problem where I keep getting the overheating thing or it shuts down?
I wouldn't sweat it until you got it to boot back up again. What do you got, Barrett?
I was going to say, you don't want to really look at the top part of the heat sink. Those all come in different shapes and sizes. You really just want to look at the base.
Yeah.
And if it's an issue that they gave you, because a lot of these, the cooling fans, they're for gamers, they're really big to get a lot of cooling in there. If it's too big... just make sure that the base would fit to it. You know, make sure you've got the right one for the right chip, and just go back and exchange it for a smaller one. They come in all shapes and sizes. If you say, hey, I need, you know, only an inch and a half, I've only got an inch and a half of clearance, they should be able to sell you something or exchange it for something that'll fit.
Yeah, okay, but where would I pick up the fan and stuff? And like I say, that's it after I get the CPU to...
Well, if I would try someplace like Fry's or Micro Center.
And go back to where you got the other ones.
Yeah, exchange it there.
Yeah, okay.
But the thing is that, you know, at this point, you know, and this is a 2003 computer, right?
Right.
And I know companies like Gateway can be very proprietary in their components, the way that things fit together. I know Dell's on some of their computers have these weird extension tubes that come up off the CPU and have the fan up at another location in like an L shape, so you can't just go buy those anywhere.
Right.
The fan actually mounts inside of there, but it, you want to find out first and foremost if you, if this computer is not dead forever. If you,
right.
If you've damaged the CPU, then you need to be looking at it going another route in terms of getting your wife a functioning computer, which is probably like...
Well, but see, that's the thing. She likes XP a lot better. She's got a laptop top with Vista, and then she has this old gateway with XP on it, and she likes the old XP, and she's so comfortable with that, and I know it's getting so hard to find computers with XP.
Yeah, it's difficult. You can't really get a computer with XP. You can buy from Dell. We'll sell you one with an XP downgrade for an extra fee. But
downgrade for an extra fee, that's a...
Because you're still getting Vista with it, so you're basically paying for another copy of the operating system.
Right.
So that's just the way that that's going right now.
Okay.
There are, I mean, if she's comfortable using this particular gateway, you might want to go online, like someplace like eBay or Craigslist, and see if anybody's selling a functioning gateway of the same make and model.
Right.
And then you can just pull your hard drive out and stick it in that chassis and go forward. It would work.
Yeah.
I'm also concerned with the fact that it's overheating, or indicating that it's overheating, which could indicate that there's some other problem. It does, seems to me that the most basic of fans, as long as the fans are working, the system should not be overheating. So it might be an electrical problem with the power supply or something else that's trying to fail.
Right.
And you, your wife may just have to, like, you know,
be well, dragged. Well, it's funny when I put the, after I clean the fan back off, you know, the, like I say, the heat sink had some pretty good dust bunnies in it and stuff, and I cleaned it all out and put it back in, but it just didn't seem like it was blowing out any kind of good volume out the exhaust. Or
well, maybe the fan and the actual power supply is out, too. There's a fan in the power supply.
Right.
The cooling fan. So you want to make sure that that's coming on.
Right.
That could indicate that you need a new power supply.
Okay.
So, I would say, first of all, determine whether or not you've killed the system. If the if you can't get it to boot, then you're going to have to consider where you're going. I mean, you could. Do you have the software for the gateway itself?
Right. Yes. We've got all the original software and stuff. Yeah.
The thing is you won't be able to find. I don't think you could search around to see if you could find a system board with a CPU for that model of gateway. You might be able to find one, but chances are, since gateway is mass-produced, that you'd have a better luck just finding a used computer of the same model.
Right.
Through a through somebody on eBay or Craigslist or the Chronicle Classifieds or whatever.
Yeah.
But for all the effort that you're going through right now to try to preserve your wife's XP experience, maybe she needs to just spend a little time learning the new operating system. You know, a new computer, not only, I mean, I understand that, you know, she may not be comfortable using Vista, or it may be something, you know, I don't think she's probably ever used Vista, so she's making a determination on being familiar with what she has,
right,
and not trying the new thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the computing experience for her, although she'll be learning some new things in Vista, she's just an average user browsing the web, sending emails and stuff. She'll do fine with Vista. And she'll have a computer that's reliable, under warranty, and about a million times more capable and faster than the computer she has now, which at this point doesn't even work.
Yes.
So you have to make a determination on how much money and time do you want to put into that. My wife has a 1986 Mazda Miata, and she has determined that she is going to drive that till the day she dies. And the check engine light on that thing came on, and we got really, really, you know, we went to the dealer, and it was going to cost a lot of money to fix it, and we found another mechanic who's very reliable. Unfortunately, we've been able to preserve it. But there comes a time when, you know, you just don't want to keep.
You got to cut and run.
You got to make, you know, with the longevity that we're experiencing now, she might live for another 20 years, and she's going to have to upgrade at some point. So you might want to just go ahead and bite that
okay.
bullet now.
Well, that's probably where we'll go then.
I would consider it strongly, but in the short term, see if you can get it back up and running. Play around with that CPU and see if you can get it to boot up. And if you do want to try to, if it does start working again, if you want to try to preserve this computer for your wife, consider going and hiring a technician. Go to talk to those people at the computer hospital or something like that and say, here's what I've got. Can you help me get this thing running? They
okay.
might be able to source the parts or whatever.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you very much for your all help.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Good night.
Bye night.
Ah.
713-526-5738. We got about 15 minutes left of good showtime left. What do you got, Dwight?
The guy who was having his problems with the UAC prompt in Vista emailed me.
He did.
And said that he can't right-click on anything and bring up Run As. And he's right. In the control panel, you can't right-click.
Right, but you have to right-click the control panel itself, and you can run it.
Yeah, that apparently hadn't worked for him either. So what I suggested that he do is try to get into Vista in safe mode and see if once he's in safe mode, he can turn off the UAC altogether. And if not, to try creating a fresh administrator account. Because the behavior he's describing sounds like he thinks he's in administrator mode, but he's in standard user mode is what it sounds like. And I don't quite understand why it's doing that, but I thought if he creates a new administrator
account
and tries
run,
to go in there,
certainly worth a shot.
But it's an odd problem.
Indeed. All right. So Groovehouse is screening calls, but he is going
to
take a moment.
We only got about 15 minutes left, though, so we're starting to get to the where you're going to be gambling if you're.
All right.
Up next.
I noticed that the microphone buffer matches your shirt.
Thank you.
That's very nice.
I color coordinate them. I've got a whole briefcase with different colored windscreens.
Yeah. All right. Who's up, Bruce?
Up next, we've got Wild Bill.
Wild Bill.
Hi. You got me here. Boy, y'all, the best thing on KPFT since I can no longer hear the Mighty 90 News live from outer space.
Wow. Thanks for that age check there, Sonny Ball.
If y'all can talk to anybody, you know, I kind of like when I'm traveling among the stars to hear that 1 billion watts parallel, you know, whatever, horizontal. Anyway, back to my real problems here. I have a Intel satellite laptop, M35. It comes with a integrated Intel Pro Wireless 2100 802.11g internet connection. I have been getting the crashes, blue screen of death, and I did the SYN error report, and I got an answer. First time that ever happened. And it says download Intel Pro Wireless LAN 2200 BG adapter software. Have you all ever heard run across this problem before?
No, I mean, is it just saying, it's talking about reinstalling your LAN drivers, right?
Yeah.
Have you, is it?
And I've downloaded the software, or whatever, the driver, and I really don't know how to extract it.
Well, it should be an executable.
Yeah.
Should be something you can just double-click and run, and it will run the installer.
Yeah.
So once you save it to the hard drive, now are you not able to get past this blue screen?
Yeah, I can bring it back up.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it usually comes back up real quick, but sometimes it'll immediately crash again, and sometimes I can, you know, surf for hours. If I turn the wireless off, it doesn't crash.
Now, I've seen that before with certain HP laptops where the wireless will talk to some wireless access point and it'll blue screen like that. The file that you've downloaded, which is hopefully the driver for the wireless, just save it to your desktop.
Okay, it's on the desktop.
And then
right
double-click
now.
It.
And, okay, I've actually, for some reason, I've got two I've got a file, and I got or a folder, and I have a zip file.
Okay, the zip file is probably the folder is probably the contents of the zip file if you unzipped it. If it's a zip file, you double click it, it opens up the compressed folder and shows you the contents, and you say extract all files.
Okay, when I double click it, it says page has an unspecified security flaw. Would you like to continue? Yeah. And I get a driver, and I get a 12.2.00 or .0.0 something X drivers. So I've got an icon for another.
Well, if it just let you download drivers, that's going to be unfortunately rather difficult to refresh the driver on the wireless because you have to actually go to the device manager and go through a whole bunch of hoops. For every computer I've dealt with in the last 5 years, they provide, the manufacturer that is being they, the manufacturer provides a file you can download, and it's usually an executable, and you double click it, and there's a little installer that takes care of installing the drivers. So I would try looking for something like that from their site.
On the
Toshiba site, you say?
Toshiba site. Yeah. Okay.
Go to like support.toshiba.com or whatever their support site is and see if you can find the drivers. Otherwise, I don't have time in the next 12 minutes to explain how to manually install a driver in Windows XP, but it can be done. If they just gave you an INF file with some driver files, then you have to, there's a much more involved amount of rigmarole that you have to go through to install it. Worst case comes to worst, you should have recovery disks for this computer, right?
Somewhere.
I mean, how old is this laptop?
It's about 4.5.
Right.
Maybe 5 years.
I mean, at the worst case scenario, you can just reload the system using the recovery disks, and that'll put everything back. If it's a software issue, it'll correct the problem. But you'd have to back up your data and reload it. But if you... wow, okay, so we have a flashing full queue. At any rate, if you want to try to solve this problem, I would start by going back to the Toshiba site and finding the driver for this thing and saving that file to your desktop. If it's a zip file, then extract the contents of that zip file into a folder on the desktop and then open that folder and look for an executable file that's called setup or something. See if you can run that. I mean, do you have that folder right now? I'm really running out of time, but
go ahead and get somebody else, and I'll.
I mean, look, start from scratch. Yeah, you can email me through the website, and I'll be happy to help you. But start from scratch. Download the file. If it's a zip file, double click it, and then extract all, and then specify the desktop folder where you want to extract the files to, and then open that folder and look for an executable file, usually called setup or something like that. Double click that. And that should run the driver installer and set it up.
All right. I'll give that a try. Thank you.
Sorry, I don't have a better answer for you. It's a little bit involved, but go ahead. All right. We are running out of time.
Yes, we are.
9 minutes. We got a full bank of calls.
We're going to take Daniel next.
All right.
Daniel.
Daniel.
Yeah.
Daniel, you're on the air and we're in a hurry.
Hola, senor.
Yeah. I have a very strange situation. Can you hear me?
Yes. I can.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. My PC is a HP Media Center Edition. For 2 days ago, for no reason, it just doesn't boot up. And I finally get it boot up by testing all different thing, and finally I pull the memory stick and put it back in. Now I can get it up, but I cannot log back in. It won't accept the password. And is there a way for me to get back in? And unfortunately, that's the only account we use. We didn't create a user account.
When you say it won't accept the password, what happens when you try?
It just say that the system could not lock you on, make sure your username or password.
There's a virus. This sounds like the virus that affected the city of Houston, where their computers went down, and when they tried to bring it back up, they could not log in.
Oh.
So I would suggest, which yeah, they had a hell of a time trying to remove this. I would suggest if you have a restore disk for that machine, that you may want to do a restore on it to get rid of, just a full restore to get rid of that.
Oh.
That's what that sounds like.
If it's the virus, if it's not the virus, if for some reason, now when you had this computer, were you not prompted for a login previously?
No, I've been using password to log in.
Okay.
And, yeah, it's my mistake that I didn't create a user account. I've been using the administrator username and create a password.
If it's the virus, then what Dwight says is probably true, that you need to probably consider reloading the system. Hopefully you've got your files backed up.
Okay.
If it's an issue with the password on the account being, you know, just not working properly.
Or corrupted, yeah.
Or corrupted. There is a program called NT Password, and it's spelled NTPASSWD. And if you Google search that, NTPASSWD, it's a utility. It's a boot disk that you can make. And it will let you boot the computer up from the CD and let you go in and change the password on any account that's on that computer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Even though if indeed this PC is hit by the virus, you can still use
it? No, if it's hit by the virus, Dwight's answer holds true.
It's still restored.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Do you know if I use the recovery function of the PC to do that? Because I don't have a recovery CD. I didn't make a recovery CD.
If you can't get logged in and you don't have any options, who makes the computer?
HP.
Call HP, tell them what you have, and they could probably arrange to send you the restore disks for a small fee, like $10 or $20.
Although HP has a recovery partition on it.
Yeah, it
that's true. You could try that. You could try that. Yeah.
Use the recovery partition.
On the hard disk, like when I boot up and hit...
Listen, we are out of time. We're going to have to move on. But yes, you can try that key command at the beginning and try to restore from there if you like. All right?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Next up.
Up next, we've got Scooter.
Hey, guys, I have a real quick question. For MP3 codecs for Window Machine, I have a codec that expands how many different flavors of MP3s that you could make with your Windows machine. And I'm wondering if, do I need that for a Vista machine? And if so, will the codec that I've been installing in my machine since like 2000, will that work in a Vista machine?
Well, first of all, have you tried it without the codec?
No, I haven't. I'm asking if I'm wondering if I need that.
Well, I can't tell you the answer to that because I don't know. I would, whenever I'm dealing with codecs, at least the way that I operate a computer, is that I try to do what I need to do without installing anything in terms of playback or recording. And if I don't get what I need, then I go look for the solution that I need that's going to get me there. So I would start off by not installing anything and see what you get. And if you can't get it, then consider installing that or see if there's a latest version for Vista or whatever.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right. And one last call, but we can give them the 1 minute speed round.
James, you're on.
James, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. A real quick question. I use my friend's external hard drive. I'm trying to get video onto my brother's computer, but when I try to do that, the Vista, it doesn't pop up under my computers, the actual external hard drive. I looked under disk management, it says unallocated, not initialized.
Okay.
So it's a Vista basic.
Now, has the hard drive got data on it that you're trying to recover?
No, the external hard drive has video files that I need to edit.
Okay, so the Vista machine's not reading it, but you put it on another computer and it can read it?
Exactly.
Burn it to a CD.
Try it on a USB drive?
Yes.
Try it on a different USB. Well, that's weird. I mean, and you've gone back to another computer to verify that it can read it?
Yes, I tried on both Mac and Windows XP.
And those computers can see the files no problem.
Exactly.
But the Vista machine won't initialize the drive.
Exactly.
Is it a laptop or desktop?
Laptop.
Have you got power going to the drive?
No, it's running through cable, the USB cable.
Okay, does the not all laptops have enough power to drive the external hard drive? I've run into that problem with some laptops, and I have to use a power drive to read the files. USB does not offer enough power to fire the drive up.
Well, I can feel the disk within the external hard drive spinning.
Well, does it have a power adapter for the drive?
Then try it with the power adapter. Okay, if that doesn't do it,
call the manufacturer of the computer and tell them what you've got going on and see if they can troubleshoot that with you.
That's awesome.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. All right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bites here on KPFT Houston, the first spyware-free show we've had in a long time.
Maybe.
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 So there are a couple of maybes.
There was a couple of maybes in there.
Well, we didn't go down that path.
But it was a hell of a show. Damn.
It was cyber.
I'm just talking about the show.
Shut your mouth.
We really hope that you will consider joining us at Coffee Grounds this Friday for the Technology Bites Monthly Geek Gathering. It's going to be a great time. You can find out information on that from our website at geekradio.com. It's an early event, all ages. Come on out and hang out with us. Party, party, party. You can hang out. We're giving away Dwight's iPhone.
No, they're not.
We're giving it to Dwight, but we're still giving away an iPhone. We'll see you next Wednesday night, hopefully Friday night. Stick around for Border Crossings coming your way at 10 o'clock. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
I'm Greenhouse.
KPFT is now accepting nominations for listener members to its program council. The KPFT.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.